You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome to Axe to Grind, the hardcore podcast. I'm Patrick.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Tom.
And fellas, I'm currently in the theater room in I don't call this a mansion, but a large home. And I chose this room because it has the deadest sound in these otherwise really large rooms. And I think I'm going to get chased out of here in a second. So you may hear the difference between me being in a sound deadened room and just a large wooden room.
Well, you know what I think? Chased out of there. Is your host going to watch like Abigail or something to get like some screeners? Like, what's going on?
Now, my host has, if I turned on his Apple thing and showed you the collection of movies that he owns, it's
Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo. Yeah.
No, there's no comedies. It's all of one strike. And it's all Gerard Butler action films. So we're talking about like 60 movies probably in his collection. And I would say 13 of them are Gerard Butler kicking a man in the chest.
Can you text him? Does he like, so it's 300, the two like Have Fallen movies, right? Is there two or three?
There's two, but I think they're making another one. He's a huge fan of...
What about Law Abiding Citizen?
A huge fan of Law Abiding Citizen, and he's so excited that there's going to be a Law Abiding Citizen 2.
I don't, if you remember how that movie ended, I don't know how there's going to be a second one.
Well, we're thinking it might be a prequel.
Amazing.
Bob, have you ever seen this?
No.
I don't know if it's a movie that sucks so bad. I mean, I liked it.
No, it's good. Come on.
But you're supposed to hate him, but you root for him the whole time.
That's great. I love it.
I don't know if it's like bad writing or if he's like, you know, how you like, you go to the movie for Freddy Krueger, for Darth Vader.
Yeah, right. You're there for it. So three things. One, it's nice to be talking to small room Patrick when we've all gotten so used to big room Patrick. That we'll see. Two, Tom, after the last few episodes, there has been a call made to the Axe to Grind offices saying, you should be doing some movie podcasts, because I'm like, yo, people, you have no idea. Tom could do a horror movie podcast tomorrow and it'd rip. So
Pat.
No, I just go in because I wanted, when you're done, I'm going to list some of these movies. I'll make it quick. But
I mean, there's some fucking straight to video bullshit in there.
Oh, it's like 50% VOD. When the classiest movie in your collection is The Accountant, you know. You're really dealing with some shit over here.
And three, go ahead, Tom.
I like horror, but there's so many horror movie podcasts. What am I going to add to it?
I know. Well, anyways, people, not just horror movies, but movies in general. Tom's a man to go to. Let's get some guest appearances here. Improve your podcast by having him guest. Three, let us thank and praise our wonderful benefactors, our sponsors, Run for Cover Records.
This is Sparta.
Oh!
Closed Casket Activities.
Along Came a Spider.
Convulse Records.
Arlington Road.
And To Live a Lie.
Boiler Room.
Guys, we're doing quick hits today on the podcast ad reads. I'm going to keep it quick. I'm going to keep it short. I'm going to keep it tight. Each record company is putting out tons of stuff. I'm going to tell you, well, one thing you got to order right now. Convulse Records, convulserecords.com. Reorder the American Culture. Hey, brother, it's been a while. This is their third LP. This is not what you think. There's a lot of different things here. Let me read this. I thought this was good. Sonically, American Culture effortlessly weaves the band's many influences into one cohesive sound, conjuring up an endless array of rock music fantasy scenarios. What if the Stone Roses were fronted by Jim Carroll? What if Spiritualized and the Replacements wrote music together? What if the Meat Puppets were a C86 band? So anyways, if any of that sounds interesting, check it out. Even if you don't, there's a music video, a couple tracks out there already. I think this band's super interesting, and I think you will too. So check it out. American Culture. Hey, brother, it's been a while. Run for Cover Records, runforcoverrecords.com. Let's see. Boop, boop, boop. Tons of stuff to pick from, but given that this is a hardcore podcast in 2024, we talk about a lot of things. We talk about hardcore. We talk about adjacent. We talk about stuff that's all around. One Step Closer, All You Embrace. This is a band that continues to do big things. Just finished the Anxious, Koyo, OSC tour. All those bands ripped. Even if you just like their earlier material, they're evolving. So check this out. All You Embrace, One Step Closer. Must check. To Live a Lie, tolivealie.com. I'm always telling people the vault is deep, distro's deep. This is one of my favorite records. Actually goes to an off air conversation we have about power violence. What's power violence? What's not? What's just super fast hardcore? Bah, bah, bah. None of that really matters. What matters are tracks. The band Running for Cover. The LP is the Dark Well LP. This came out on 625. It's been out of print for a long time. There are a few in the To Live a Lie store that were long out of print item in stock for a limited time. These were touched by Max himself. These are unplayed but older, so may have some mild warping and ring wear, blah, blah, blah. Yo, it doesn't matter. This record's one of the best power violence records of the past 20-something ever. I think this record's great. Demo was great. I think these are guys who also spent time in They Live from the Buffalo area. This record's awesome. Must get it. Running for Cover, Darkwell LP. I promise you will not be disappointed if that description sounded good. And finally, Closed Casket Activities. They have a couple limited versions of the Gate Creeper Dark Superstition. Dark Superstition pre-order up right now. The people who know, this is a band who's been doing their thing for a while. Makes so much sense to get this from Closed Casket. Also, this is a band from the desert. I see some saguaro cactuses on the front, some broken glass, some weird psychedelic shit. It's cool. Go get it. Get the green and white mix with black splatter. Awesome. CloseCasketActivities.com. Boom. Pretty quick. How you doing? How you feeling, guys? Thanks. I'm going to talk less now because I just did the ad reads. Patrick, how are you, buddy?
You surviving? Cliffhanger.
Is Pat surviving?
That's how you feel?
He's thriving.
I'm just I'm going to pepper this with movies every once in a while. I'm just going to punctuate
say one?
Movies from this collection.
It's awesome. I love it.
The Ugly Truth.
Broken Arrow.
Oh, I've seen The Ugly Truth. God damn it. That's the rom-com with him and Katherine Heigl.
Yo, so this is a game that people talk about that men specifically can do where you could have a group of dudes, like if you're at a party or something, and men specifically, like I don't even need to know this dude's name, but we can just start talking like, yo, Bert Blylevin. Oh, Jack Morris. Oh, yeah.
Kirby Puckett.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just start talking and like just saying names of things. It's like, oh, shit. Yeah. Movies, athletes, et cetera. And it's like, it's an unspoken thing and it's like clown on. I'm like, yo, I don't know. That just makes me like almost want to cry how beautiful that is, that I don't even need to share words with anyone. I can just be like, I can just say, like, I don't need to know your name. If you were talking about something like, I'm like, yo, like, you know, The Big Lebowski. Oh, cool. Like, just movies you like. That's shit's cool. So, everybody, don't need to learn people's names. You just got to say things you like. You don't even have to describe why. Just say the thing.
Right. Yeah, just say Crimson Tide.
Right. We're good. We're in a wonderful place right now, just on that.
Right. We shared, like, something where... Pat, have you seen movie 43? Because I feel like that's probably the Gerard Butler movie you've seen.
Yes, I haven't just seen it. I enjoy 30% of it a great deal. It is so. I don't think that this is apocryphal. This is coming from somebody who was in the life of this person. The guy who wrote this Rogue Movie 43 is credited with, he was a guy who was making YouTube videos, and I think it's the Farrelly brothers.
They're a big part of it.
They came to him and they said, "Hey, can we have some of these?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "Do you have anything else?" And he said, "I've got some bits that I've written up, but I haven't shot them." And they said, "You will take those too." And then, according to this person who did have contact with this human being, the guy left the country on vacation the week it came out because he knew there was no way that this was going to be good for him or anyone involved. He took the money and he said, "I'm going to Europe that week. I don't know how to deal with it." Because for people who haven't seen it, it's awful in most every regard, except for it is so awful that the bits that land are beyond funny, because they exist in this morass of terrible parts. So when a line hits, it hits extra hard. And when you've got who's the fellow that played Wolverine? When you got Wolverine,
Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, when you got Hugh Jackman with a congenital defect where he's got a scrotum with large testicles on his throat, and that's the bit. it's got you laughing.
Yeah,
I mean, like, no, it's, I can't help it. Yeah, listen, I love Movie 43. I also love Executive Decision. Just another one here.
All right. Do you guys feel like talking about hardcore today, or should we just make this the movie podcast?
Gerard Butler.
He's great. Yeah. So is Russell Crowe. I watched a heavyset Russell Crowe movie last night. Good.
Is that the one where he follows a woman after like Evan Road Rage?
That's Unhinged. That's also fun. No,
do you think it was going to be bad because he was heavyset? Or
yeah, right. Is it because he's like a fat guy with a beard and you're like, this has to be terrible?
Clearly, that man can't play paintball.
No, listen.
Right. Remember when he was fucking Leonidas, whatever the fuck his name was, when he was on the fucking, with Spartacus, yeah, whatever the fucking bullshit movie he was in? When he had a six pack, but now he's fat, so of course he sucks.
No, listen.
Bad actor.
Russell Crowe was in a movie called Land of Bad, where he plays the eye in the sky, the part of a military operation, and he has to lead the team through a bad situation. And it was much better than anticipated. But listen, I'm getting off of movies because this is a hardcore podcast and I have a topic. Are you ready?
Yeah, you're getting the lead. It's got both Hemsworth. It's got two Hemsworths in it.
I don't care about them.
I mean, most people do.
Yeah, but I'm a Russell Crowe guy.
Oh, wait a minute. It's got the two off-brand Hemsworth. Never mind.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. The bootlegs, yeah.
Luke Hemsworth. Who the fuck is Luke Hemsworth?
Is their weird cousin.
Just another Hemsworth.
Just another
Hemsworth.
I'm going to borrow a topic from Twitter and expand upon it a little bit. Ready?
Love.
There was a bit on Twitter the other day. Bands that would do better now than they did at the time that they came out. And the way that I'm going to expand upon this is to gently talk about the fact that what we would call hardcore's fallow period, maybe not creatively, but the fallow period, what would we say that is? 2010 to 2020? You know what I mean? Like where there was just, there is no explaining to someone who got really engaged with hardcore post-pandemic how thin things were for a number of years and how much we normalized 50-person show.
No. Well, you know what? You're asking a good question. 2010 to 2020, you say. I
that's too long.
Me too. My instinct is to go 2010 to 2015, but I want to caveat, and Tom, I bet you co-sign me with this. That isn't to say there weren't bands who did do well, do numbers, etc.
Sure.
But there are a handful of really high-level documents and quality records from that time, but not compared to the last 5 years or the 5 years
before. Or the previous, yeah.
Or the previous five. You know what I mean? I think it's like, there's just not as many, and you can feel it is this transitory time, and it almost feels like it lasted 5 years. And to be honest, if I compare it to a time, it's 90 to 95, where there's, again, some documents that really hold up from that time, but it feels like a transition. And I'm not just, look.
That's all distracting.
No, and I'll even say 90 to 95, 96 to 2000, you could have a lot of interesting conversations. I think I fall in 96 to 2000 was better.
Yeah.
But the 2010 to 2015 reminds me of 90 to 95, where it's like, yo, there are some all-timers high level, but quantity is thin.
And I don't have my computer in front of me, so I'm going to be unable to do this, but I think it would be fun to pick bands from, not necessarily those 5 years, but in this exercise that people were doing online, it ended up being a lot of bands from that era, inevitably, right? Because a lot of bands really feel like they did not get their due, right? Like a lot of, because there's two elements to this, right? There's the element, what bands would have been more popular today because the style that they play is in, is in fashion right now. And then there's this other element, what bands were just born at the wrong time generally? You know what I mean? Like what bands were just kind of unfortunate enough to show up at a non-peak time, despite being perhaps peak act. So there's two elements there. And I think people really felt the second one regarding bands of that era. So if you guys have any, and I don't even think we need to caveat this by saying any of the, you know, we're not saying these bands didn't get love or whatever. I bet most of the bands that we say would look us in the eye and go, thank you for saying that. I feel like we didn't get enough love. You know what I mean? So what do we got, fellas?
A band that, as soon as you said it, in the 2010s, which I think this band falls in the 2010s, that I feel like if they were around now, I think they may not, it might not change in hardcore, but I think outside of hardcore, they would have been a lot bigger. Was that band Trap Them?
Oh, sure.
Interesting. Sure.
So I feel like they played a lot, like, you know, a lot of like hardcore, like basement shows and stuff like that. But I feel like if you put them, like with this current crop of like hardcore kids playing metal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like post Nails, they probably would have done a lot better.
Yeah,
I'll co-sign that, and yeah, I'll co-sign that fully because I wasn't in the target demo for Trap Them, and I thought they did pretty well. And I actually think it was their last record. I tripped over and was like, wow, this is really good.
They were excellent. Yeah,
I'll co-sign them and say in the same wheelhouse. I think that band Black Breath, who started a little before then, but really started ramping up. They were, you know, a metal band that punk kids had kind of started and done, hardcore guys too. And same energy. I think now that's like a whole world of stuff, you know? So I think they would have done better now than they did then. Because they did well, but kind of like limited scope. And it was not novelty. People thought they were good. But it was always waiting for it. Like, hey, when are they going to explode? And it didn't happen. And I think now it would have just been like, oh yeah, they pop. It just happens now. Patrick, what's your answer?
Okay. I retweeted a couple, and I don't have them in front of me, but I really like the band Steel Nation, right? Yeah. I think that their music is, yes, it's of a type, and that type always has fans and always has people that just are not engaged with it. For people that don't know, it is hard, heavy hardcore, right? And it is very well done. I've always kind of admired what they did with it. And I feel like, yeah, they probably couldn't tour as extensively as they might have liked to or whatever else. But musically, if that was young dudes debuting that right now, I think it would murder. I think it would be them and Pain of Truth would be doing co-headlines across the United States. I think that it would really genuinely hit hard. And, you know, an interesting conversation is why? What's different now? Well, okay. The general size of hardcore being bigger was worth saying, but also stuff like Pain of Truth. When a good example of something has a moment, it opens the door and people become wet for a thing. I don't mean wet like the graphic way. I mean, their appetite is whetted, right?
W-H-E-T.
So, yeah, thank you. their appetite is whetted and they want other good examples of that thing. And I think, and I think that right now, great heavy hard, something that we would have said, that's really good heavy hardcore of 10 years ago. If it hit now, I think it would brutalize. It would do so fucking well. So that would be my example. But there's other bands like that. And then there's other bands that did well in their time and I think would do even better now. Right, like Bitter End, we talk about a lot.
Yep,
that was on my list.
Yeah. Did great. Might do twice as well now. So, I don't know. I mean, heavy hardcore.
Okay, so just a quick note because, just in bands that were doing stuff at this time, hardcore and hardcore adjacent. So we all know that Super Heaven has had an explosion over the last couple of years. Their streams, they're about 2.1 million monthly listeners. I want you to think about this. Title Fight, they have not played a show since 2017, I believe. They were going strong in that frame. How many monthly listeners do you think they have on Spotify? If you had to guess.
Over a million.
You're going to say over a million. Patrick, what did you say?
500,000.
How about 1.8 million?
Fuck.
That number keeps growing, by the way. Now, let's talk about another band who was doing stuff that did pretty well around that time period. But, like, again, like, you could catch these acts at big VFWs or small clubs, you know. Basement, pretty big.
Yeah.
Yep. What do you think their monthly streams are at?
I don't know, man. You messed me up. Because I was
your homie if you played small rooms with these bands, you know, right? So,
yeah.
Just guess. It's okay. There's no insult here.
$750,000.
Okay. Tom?
Yeah, I was going to say like 800,000.
2.3 million?
Fuck.
What? God bless you, fellas. Good for you.
So like, some of this is playing out in real time. And, you know, so, no. Man, 2010 to 2015. Trapped Under Ice is still a band. They did well. They're not the kind of band we're talking about with this. But then the same thing with Title Fight, same thing with Basement. Those are like high watermarks of the era. We're talking about the flip a rock and find a great record type bands.
Yeah.
I think Bitter End's a great example.
Yeah.
Because they not that they went unheard during this time. They were touring. They were doing stuff when they could. You know, like I know they did some of those tours with Terror. I know they did stuff with Backtrack, etc. But that last LP they did is personally, it's not their high watermark for me, but it holds up in a way that I don't think people understand.
Yeah, we've talked about it. It's totally unsung. It's completely unsung by a band that is, we would probably all agree, is underappreciated even in the moment that they, you know, they had love. People love them, and we still think that they're probably even better than that. But that last record is completely unsung, and people should revisit it. And if it came out today from, you know, from the most energetic young dudes of the Upper Peninsula, it would murder.
Okay, so
decimate.
So to this is a good one. People talk about Pat Flynn's bands have heart, does well. Those shows this summer are going to be bonkers. Biddlehead, obviously a huge band. The band he did that got almost no love, Sweet Jesus. I think you can put that LP they did, You Destroy Yourself, which came out in 2015 on Sonic Action. I think you can put that up against just about any of the records he's been on as high level. It is a fantastic record. Would it do better now? Yes, I think it would. I think there's an audience who would be here for it that wasn't there in 2015. Like, yeah. This is a band who, like, I think they were playing shows to fives and tens of people.
Well, check this out. If Military Gun is Blue Tip, then Pat's band is Swizz.
This is Swizz. That's right. And it was very Swizz, you know. So.
Very Swizz. But what I'm saying is that they could share stages right now and people would enjoy the shit out of it.
Absolutely. So I think that's an easy one. But a record that's like one of those, like, I still think people are discovering it. You know what I mean? Like, haven't heard it. And there's a lot of people out there who be loving Fiddlehead and haven't heard it. And there's no diss on that. It's like, yo, Fiddlehead's right now. They're happening. 139,000 monthly listeners. That's fucking wild. And let's take a quick look and guess on Sweet Jesus. They are at a robust 300 monthly listeners.
Fuck.
So,
could probably do better than that.
I implore everyone in the sound of my voice to go check that out, please.
Yeah, that's Reindeer Games, my guy.
I got that, Pat. It was good.
That was good. I know that one.
I got one that Pat's going to agree with me on.
Hit me.
Axis.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
All right, so give some context to this band.
Okay. Florida.
Super fucking heavy, like Turmoil-ish.
Turmoil, and this is how I describe this.
I mean, Turmoil also, if we're being honest. Turmoil, if they came out now, would be huge.
Yeah, they would. But, okay, Axis is doing Turmoil, but more to the point, they're doing like the platonic ideal of what people think of when they think of Turmoil. It is a type of, whether you want to call that metalcore or
very, I think that's lowercase metalcore.
Yes, I agree.
To discern that, like, that kind of difference is, yeah, it's not a Muir, it's fucking metalcore. Like, what your fucking old uncle thinks is metalcore, that's what Axis is.
That's exactly right. So we've talked about roots metalcore. That's this might be first wave metalcore. So, okay, it is metalcore, and it is of a type done so perfectly. Not, I take issue with some of these bands that are like, I love Morning Again. My band sounds exactly like Morning Again. That's not what this is. It's just the platonic ideal of that sound. And it is very well done, ferocious live. I might have stepped in some shit and had the, you know, couldn't play certain places, whatever. And that cost them a little bit, cost them a little momentum. Being from Florida at that exact moment probably cost them a little bit of momentum. And it didn't break the way that I thought it should have. Anybody that goes back and revisits that record,
yeah, sure, you agree.
Yeah, it's going to be very pleasantly surprised. It is heavy, and it is it is incredibly well played and good at what it is. That's one. It's tough to say where metalcore of the type that we would ever sort of intentionally listen to, it's tough to say where that is going for me, because I see bands doing it, but they don't live very long. You know what I mean? Like, they have fans and people are excited about them. And then, like Adrian. Adrian was picking up steam. My understanding is Adrian no more.
Yeah, I do.
Yep.
You know, so it seems like that's a. Wouldn't that be interesting if metalcore adopted all of the, in my view, bad habits of hardcore? if it was just a bunch of kids doing demo metalcore and then breaking up after a summer, and that was how that scene expressed itself. That would be an interesting way to go. Because metalcore, I don't mean to opine too much and editorialize. Metalcore, the knock against it forever and always is that by nature, it becomes careerist much quicker than hardcore does. But
right.
What if it never did? You know what I mean? Like, what if there's just a scene of metalcore kids that are like, oh yeah, no, we're breaking up after the summer because I'm going to go be a pipe fitter. And you're like, right. What? You're supposed to give the next 7 years of your life to this until you got a pill problem and you're really bitter.
You almost have created a new genre that I think you belong in, which is metalcore, democore. That's you. MCDC. Describe your style of metalcore pretty well? Like, good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Because I do not like, you know, Tom, I never can tell if Tom is maybe being a little charitable because these are people that he's known for 30 years and likes and calls friends. Or because he will go even further than I will. Like, he'll say, no, I won't fuck with Zayo. That was always too Christian for me. But he will say, yeah, you know, that third Walls of Jericho record had some heavy parts. And I'll go, Tom.
Two Walls of Jericho records that I still back.
Listen, but I never know how much it is shaped by the fact that some of these people and everybody, I don't know the kids in Walls of Jericho. They're probably cool as hell. I was a fan of this stuff. I wasn't touring at that time. So Tom has real like on the ground experience in the trenches with these bands. And I was just like, liked this, didn't like that. But, I probably that would be how you would show my metalcore colors would be a little bit more on the democore side. But I like Band to stick around. I like Band to stick around.
Your metalcore interests sonically fall towards bands who stay true to their democore origins, the metalcore democore sounds.
Yeah, stop singing.
Just yell your fucking face off. Yell like it sounds like you're breathing inward.
By the way, I had an interesting conversation with a band's manager the other day, and I thought the band was far bigger than my band. And he said, no, right now they're smaller than your band.
Avenged Sevenfold?
No. I would love to be bigger than Avenged Sevenfold. That would mean we got two houses, honey. It's a band that, you know, some of our listeners either got introduced to kind of hardcore Jason stuff on or, you know, maybe still like, you know, I don't know. So a lot of these, it's a gateway band for sure. Uncanny Valley sort of stuff. And I said, they're big, right? And he said, no. And we talked about it. And I said, what went wrong? And he said, they wouldn't stop singing. Wow. I said, that would ruin that for me. All right. Good. We're on the same page.
All right, let me ask you a question. You guys have, like, you know bros, right? Like, you know dudes.
I do know some dudes, yeah.
Do you know anybody, and this is no disrespect. It sounds disrespectful, so I apologize in advance to M Shadows. Do you know anybody that actually listens to Avenged Sevenfold?
No.
Like, in 2024. Like, no. I know, was it Balmora? One of those bands, like an OG, like an old. I mean, also, Avenged Sevenfold have been around since, like, their early aughts.
Yep.
So, like, or even late 90s, even. But, like, if you ever see them on a flyer, if you look at, like, the band lineup, like, at every festival, they're headlining.
Oh, I can get numbers.
Like, Judas Priest and shit. It's fucking insane.
I can get numbers for you, I think, right now, if you want. It's they're massive. They're scary massive. I don't know a single person, but here's my guess. If I was on dating apps in Central California, I think I would find a lot of people that are into that.
Pat, how many monthly listeners A7X have?
3.5.
10.
Whoa.
9.9 million.
My God.
Let me just Avenged Sevenfold, let's be realistic. They sold out the Garden, so that's not. Let's see.
Yo, I want to just put on blast the bands who play the Garden but don't sell it out or, like, kind of looks weak. It's cool. You played the Garden, Limp Bizkit, but you didn't sell that out, and it looked kind of whack. It's still the Garden, but, like, when a band sells out.
You lost money on that deal.
That's right. When you sell out the Garden, oh, goddamn.
I mean, this band 100% sold out the Garden. Let me see. Pat's playing Hellfest in France with them. with Avenged Sevenfold.
Boys.
Maybe you could become friends with M Shadows. So they are headlining the Thursday night, the headline in the main stage over Megadeth. Dropkick Murphys is somehow playing after them on the other stage.
Oh, wow.
Dropkick Murphys are pretty big.
They're pretty fucking humongous, too. But, like, this is why I'm 900 years old. Bob, Dropkick Murphys headlining the second stage at Hellfest Thursday night. What time do you think they go on?
9 p.m.?
1.05 a.m.
No, thank you.
1.05 to 2.05. And they're also playing against Enter Shikari and Cradle of Filth.
They're playing against my bedtime was 3 hours before that, baby.
Where's Patty? Pat's playing. So he's playing the 30th. He's opening for are you open for the Foos? Yeah, you're opening for the Foos.
Okay.
No big deal playing with Foo Fighters.
Yeah. Pat's favorite band.
You're playing the Warzone Sage Respect, RIP Rabies.
Yeah, RIP.
You're playing against Heart, which is kind of funny.
True.
Yeah. So your stage is Sorcerer at 11:05 in the morning, which makes me want to hang myself. Gel, Scowl,
yep.
Drug Charge,
right.
Show Me the Body,
yeah.
High Viz, Madball.
Okay.
Headlining your stage, Patty. I think you're going to have to do a fucking, you're going to have to talk to my boy, you know, our fella Colin, and see if you can do a little fucking I Live in Morbaya, whatever song you did. Didn't you do On an Island?
I don't know. Out on an Island, I did.
Yeah. Cox Bar is headlining.
Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Did you know that?
I did not, but as you might guess, I take some issue with our billing. But happy
to plead everybody. Everybody's heart. You never wrote a song like Alone.
No, listen. I mean, that's why I take some issue. I take some issue with my billing for that reason. Honestly, I'm, you know, obviously happy for everybody. Hold on one sec. I'm going to get away from these dogs before they start moaning. but the one dog starts moaning. The weirdest thing in the world. Also, pointers. Everybody, I'm not making light of severe mental illness, but pointers are mentally ill dogs. Have you ever had a pointer in your life?
They're not fun.
They're not fun. Yeah, you nailed it. They're not fun. They're neurotic in a way that's, like, this dog saw a raccoon in a tree once, and it that was half a year ago, and the dog goes and stares at the tree for as long as you will allow that dog to stare at the tree. It points at the tree. If you left the dog outside for an hour, she would point at the tree for an hour. It's really wild. It's not healthy, though. Anyway, Pierce the Veil. What are their lists?
Heart is 10.6 million.
10.6?
So maybe happy. Good job, Heart.
They have some fucking
tracks. Crazy on You. Oh my God. Oh my God. You're saying Pierce the Veil. Pierce the Veil.
5.6.
5.6. They sold out a 10,000 cap the other day.
Is that the one that was in London?
10,000. Yes. 10,000, everybody. Look, let's do some math on this. And this is 100% respectful to people that I admire. When we talk about Turnstile being the biggest band in the world, it's just, there is this whole other layer of things that our audience and myself included don't listen to.
Like a day to remember.
Oh, it's all so big.
Those dudes are playing fucking arenas, man.
It's all so big. So, I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, okay, do we want to continue with this exercise, or do we want to jump Patrick's topic to topic weird brain happening right now?
Let's go weird brain happening. Next topic.
Pat, if it's any consolation, High on Fire is playing at 12:30.
Really?
In the afternoon, and you guys are playing 3 hours after them. Right? You go on at 3:10, Simple Plan ends at 325.
Therapy. Thank you.
Remember that band Therapy with a question mark?
Of course, question mark, yeah.
They're playing right after you guys on the Valley stage.
To celebrate them, I think they might have a track on the Judgment Night soundtrack. So,
they do. Therapy. Wait, isn't that the one? Oh, no. What's their song? Coming down. No. What the fuck song is that? Hold on. Please hold.
Well, let me say, everybody, I don't actually have any issue with my billing. Show Me the Body and Hive Dudes both have more energy rather than my band. I think it's something that I've learned is to not, unless you're getting really fucked by a lineup, is to just be gracious because you don't know what you don't. You don't know what you don't know. Like,
it's also crazy how much time they give these bands. Hive Dudes has an hour.
Fuck.
Mad Bull has an hour. Cox Bar has an hour.
And guys, come on.
Like, that's a lot of for those bands.
That's a lot of Mad Ball, man. That's a lot of ball right there.
Fucking Hive Dudes might have to play like half the new record.
Yeah. We're doing the set again.
Yeah, like, I hope you like Trombones because we're playing it three times. Like, that's a lot of fucking, that's a long time. Like, for a festival like that, because usually you feel like festivals, you're like, oh, cool, we get 18 minutes. Like, Gel gets a half an hour. Scowl gets 40. Drug Church gets 45.
No, I don't want to play 45.
Like, I feel like on a festival, like, those seems like, I mean, that's cool. You get decent time.
Yeah, yeah. Hold on. There's somebody who would know just entered the chat. The band Avenged Sevenfold on their own headliner would fill what sized room? What is that? What? Give me a number, though.
They sold out arenas, like probably 15,000?
Evan? 10,000. Okay. Pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah. Okay. So here's the topic. Pariah bands.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This was brought up to me in the context of a band that experienced some success and has kind of maybe thrown dirt on their name. No sort of canceled bullshit or anything like that. They just have, they've stepped on themselves. And now nobody wants to take them out. Not their peers and not the young bands that grew up listening to them, because they've damaged their own reputation that much. And what do you do when you are a pariah band? Do you sit down for some extended length of time? And by the way, now that I am in that world where I make some portion of my income off of music, I can say that the idea of sitting down for like 2 years is crazy. That's like the bands that do that, and there's a great many of them, and some of them are friends of ours. That's insane.
Is it their income?
Or at least a huge chunk, right? Because I'm not saying anything that our audience doesn't know. If you're going to be a full-time musician, you can have another job, and perhaps that other job even makes you more money. But that other job, almost by nature, has to be a side thing, because your schedule takes you away at uncertain intervals, and normal jobs don't permit for that. So you let's say that you buy one of those machines that puts the paint on parking lots. Right. And that's your job that you do when you're home. And between band and doing that, you have a completely nice, normal income and can support a family. That was really great. But what happens if your bandmate turns to you and says, yeah, let's take a two off? And you say, pardon? And he says, two. You say, okay, but that will mean that I have to do a lot more parking lots. And when we come back to this, the parking lots might be looking good. You know, like, you're like, you can't lose your momentum on this thing that we're doing together. So, but, you know, bands have their reasons, whatever. But what do you do as a pariah band is my question. And can you name any pariah bands without feeling like you're shitting on somebody on this podcast?
I think that's kind of impossible.
Yeah, that's kind of impossible. All right.
The first band I thought of, which is, I think, is the band you're describing.
Don't get me in trouble.
Huh?
Don't get me in trouble.
No. I mean, I think it's a band that we love. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, all right, I love Sick. No. Right? I okay. love Sick.
Go Sick of it. I love Sick of it.
Right? Changed my life.
Yep. Changed my life. I give them credit for what I do on stage.
And when I explain that, I go, yeah, if you watch Pat, he's just doing Luke Kohler. That's without Cavaricci's.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, then you go, oh, I see what he's doing.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't notice that just because you're, like, not as tall or whatever, like, as Lou is, and gangly as Lou was back in the day or whatever. Mm-hmm. Would you, like, under your description, do you find there they might be a pariah band?
Right,
because, like, you know, Turnstile's not looking to take them out necessarily.
Right.
But in their defense, there were so many bands that they took out when they were at the fucking top of the mountain, and not to sound all sour for them, that didn't return the favor.
Sure.
But I don't know to what end. Like, you know, like, them going out with Rise Against, is that going to fucking help Sick of It All? Maybe not.
So this shit
or
is...
AFI really... or any of those bands that became huge, that, like, their fan bases are not, you know... I feel like if Sick of It All went out and did, like, a full U.S. or, like, the Dropkick Murphys, mm-hmm. that would probably work out great for them, or with Rancid.
Oh, Rancid did great. Well... So, yes. Okay. So, Tom, everybody, we're going to talk very hypothetically about Sick of It All and with a lot of reverence. So, okay, you're running into multiple problems. You're running into the problem that if they go out with Dropkick Murphys, that's a great tour for them. Everybody at those shows is going to either be familiar with them and say, wow, added value to my ticket, or they're going to know the name. And when they see Sick of It All, who are still one of the best live bands going, they're going to go, holy fucking shit. And they're going to have a great time. So that is a perfect tour. The problem is, I don't know if it actually does what touring is supposed to do for you, right? It will keep them solvent. And yeah, that's one function of touring when you get to a certain level. But it's also like you are playing in front of an aged audience who... has limited bandwidth for you at this stage in their life. You know what I mean? So it is a good tour, but kind of a evolutionary dead end in a way. That's how I see that, right? Now, the money thing is another problem, although I'm guessing, this is speculatory, I don't know, speculative, that I fully believe that Dropkick Murphys could make Sick of It All a completely fair offer that
I would imagine so. Yeah. Because they're doing big rooms.
Yes.
I mean, but we'll get to that. All right. So, for example, similar, but not exact. Do you know who's on tour with Helmet right now? And is playing Bowery Bar?
No.
Fucking Cro-Mags.
Oh, right.
Yo, Helmet's got the worst PR of any band I know.
What do you say, Ben?
Helmet's got a bad publicist. No disrespect to their publicist, but you're bad at your job. Because Helmet plays way more than I thought, and I only find out when my friends are playing their shows.
When they did that run with Soul Blind,
I know. Which I did not talk to them about. I hope that was fun.
Yeah, it sounded like it was good. I mean, he's like a lot of old heads. I'm like, I mean, dude, their biggest record came out fucking 30 years ago.
Yep,
their biggest record. Meantime, well, Betty even is older than everybody in
Soul Blind. Yeah.
Oh, okay. But here's the wow, that's crazy. Betty is older than Soul Blind?
Betty's crazy. Like 96, 95.
Yeah, yes, definitely.
That's
yeah.
Crazy.
You know, most people in bands right now are old or younger than Betty.
That's crazy. So Helmet could easily be somebody's Velvet Underground, like, to me. Right?
Dude, Helmet came out 30. I mean, Betty came out 30 years ago. June 20th, 1994. Meantime was 92.
Yeah. Okay. So,
how old is Paige Helm? How old is
He's actually... So he's actually older than I assumed. I actually looked like a couple years ago. He's on the other side of 55. Am I right?
That's correct.
He's 64 years old.
Yes.
Holy God. So yeah. Okay. That, wow. He was
30 when Helmet started.
That's right.
Right.
64.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
He was 25 when Hardcore started.
Fuck.
Wow. It's wild. Okay. So here's not to put anybody's. I did the math on Bruce 200 Demons because he posted a photo of him and his brother. His brother was on his lines and I guess he passed away. And when he gave he said, you know, this photo is from like whatever the date was, right? And he was in military uniform. So he's 17 at the absolute youngest in this photo. And the date, I was like, Bruce's been around. Bruce's been around a minute.
He says it in one of the songs on the Eyes of the Lord record. When he was like,
I was in Grenada.
18 and 82 or something. Like he says.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I could have done
that's also a record that if it came out now, it would be a lot bigger.
Yes.
That record fucking rules.
That's. And I think, sorry to go backwards. A Cold as Life record right now, I honestly don't know if it would hit the same way. Because while it is heavy and it is hard, I think that it also shows its age, for better and for worse, right? But something like that comes from that next generation, like 100 Demons, I think would be more in the pocket if it came out right now for a great many kids. So, I think that's a good example. But okay, Pariah Band. Now, Sick of It All was not the band I was talking about because Sick of It All has not had a run of terrible records. I mean, you and I don't love their recent records, and there's a couple cringe moments that we don't appreciate. But it's not like an embarrassment. I'm talking about like you. You couldn't play anything off your last turn reference. Like that's the situation you're in as a band. That if you're playing one from your last two records, it is like you know what you're doing and that's bumming people out. You just want to get it off. Now, Bob, what do you do?
There's many bands who have long careers, who find themselves in a place where they play a couple songs off the latest record.
They have to.
Because they have to. And they try to keep it to the greatest hits, and hopefully they have enough hits in the tank to shuffle those up so it's not the same set. But if they don't, they try to stick to the greatest hits. That can get really tough.
I read a good article about this.
Oh, please.
Speaking about Pariahs, totally not related to hardcore, but it fits the story completely. Jennifer Lopez.
tracks.
Right.
Oh, all Pariah. The songs that she...
Pariah.
Are you talking about all the songs that she... that aren't hers?
Or she didn't sing? I didn't realize that. It was like, oh, no, that's like... That's so-and-so.
That's Ashanti. And yeah. It's Ashanti doing the chorus, and it's they didn't even drop her out. They just kind of had J-Lo sing part of that, and then the rest is Ashanti.
But they were saying like how she was never really like loved and beloved. But, like there was a story about like she was trying to like cause beef with Mariah Carey, and some like reporter asked Mariah Carey like asked her about Jennifer Lopez, and this is like 2003, and Mariah Carey goes, "I don't know who that is." It was like such a fucking like oh god.
Oh, yeah.
But the whole story was so she came out with this record, "This Is Me," ..
Yes.
Now, yes.
She did a documentary about it and a movie that she paid for out of pocket, $20 million.
Yeah, it's like that Metallica movie. And when I say that, people go, "Some Kind of Monster, it's good." I go, no. There's
The narrative. Yeah, it's like, yes, no need. And they put money into that. So she was going on a tour, the This Is Me Now tour. They were like canceling shows left and right because they weren't selling any tickets. Then it became This Is Me, the greatest hits.
Oh. Yeah.
But that's the same kind of thing. You can go out and be like, hey, like, I don't think any band, because we're all delusional in a way.
Yes.
No band puts out a record. They're like, this is hot shit. This is garbage. But we need to have this out here to justify going on tour.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel like bands do that just because it's like, this is the new cycle.
But here's the thing. We're talking, yes, and this has crossover, but I'm talking about something very specific. The band that does that and their audience has not come along for the ride. So there are bands that continue to put out records and their fans will nod their head for a song or two, but they're waiting for the hits. And then there's bands that there's fans of bands that are like, nah, man, I'm good. I like your record from 2005. I still bump it. I still use the CD. But
Break up Coke? Like, what do you?
Yeah. I'm sure that some people still have CD players. If your car is a piece of trash, I have the player. So
What kind of car do you have?
You know what? When people say shit like that, listen here. When people say shit like that, what kind of vehicle
do you have, Pat? What kind of vehicle?
What is it? Oh, you know what? Vehicle? I fly around in little jets.
Oh, you could just pick that up at the lot yourself, or
Did I send you guys the video of me?
No, you didn't. I saw a picture
that fucking
Eric posted.
Eric had a post of you and your fucking fighter jet.
Fun.
I'll send.
It was fun.
I wouldn't go that far. Here's what I'll say: you feel very exposed in a. So everybody, I don't actually fly around in fucking jets. I just flew. I took a flight in a jet. This should probably seem obvious. I took a flight in a jet that is a 2-seater. Experimental aircraft. So
I don't want to experiment.
20 minutes from LA to San Diego?
18 minutes. And it is so obviously fast. There's a lot of benefits in that respect. But you feel like you're in Wonder Woman's invisible jet because you feel like two things. First and foremost, it's a glass canopy sort of thing, whatever. And picture that in your head.
It's like a Tesla.
Like, but you're never not looking, you're never not like very close to falling 10,000, 20,000 feet. That's just how it feels, right?
Right.
And then it has shared controls between the front and the back. So there's a stick immediately in front of you. There's pedals immediately in front of you in the back seat. And if I touch any of those, they respond
you get put to the test on your, yeah, I think I could fly a plane.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, let's talk about that. First, you've got the idea.
Right. You did say you could do that, didn't you?
I'm
callback, Bob.
Here's the thing. When the guy flying the jet going 500 miles per hour, there is no co-pilot. And the idea that he could have a sugar-induced moment is terrifying when you confront that, like, in terms of inches. Like, this person is inches away from me. And I've been in propeller planes, but I'm not going 500 miles per hour in a propeller plane. This is very vulnerable. It's the most vulnerable I felt in a long time. And you know how like males specifically have that Bruce Willis impulse of Mark Wahlberg. If I was on those 9/11 planes, this would have gone different.
Yeah,
that's right.
Right. Men have this thing. It's irrational, but it also, in some respects, it's probably evolutionary that it keeps us going, right? Yeah. This works against you when you're at the bar and you're like, Mike Tyson, I've seen him plenty of fights, but he's old now. I'm going to slap his face. And, you know, it doesn't, Yeah, it doesn't, like, it goes bad often. But
I can land this fucking thing. Come, how hard can it be to pull the fucking wheels out?
Right. You don't feel that way in a jet. you feel in danger the entire goddamn time. And you also feel that when you hit any turbulence, you will 100% enter a panic state, unlike any you've ever been in. Yes. So I don't have intrusive thoughts. I've never had suicidal ideation, but this might have happened to you guys in your life. Have you ever been on a bridge? Have you ever been on a roof? Some place where people kill themselves, and you think, man, I don't want to kill myself, but what if I get the thought that I do?
Yeah. Sure. Sure.
So that's how you feel in a jet where if you touch the stick in front of you, you die. You go, okay, I'm not going to touch that. And you're like, what happens if I just fucking want to touch it?
Yeah, what if I just impulse it? Yeah, right.
Yeah, like intrusive thoughts, one. Now, like,
I take things hard.
Well, a house in North County just fucking got incinerated. Yeah,
like that Ren and Stimpy. I'm going way too far back. All right, I have two questions for you.
Go.
How snug is the cockpit? Like, Bob height, can he fit in there? My width, can I fit in there? Probably not, right?
Bob's height, yes. Not too irritating, although.
Oh, that's
because you can't touch the pedals. His knees would be a little high, but. He's not. His head is not going to touch the top of the glass canopy.
Okay, good.
Okay, that's surprising. Yeah. I feel like there's no way I'm getting in a fucking fighter jet. So, like, if Minded puts in the fucking, you know, the draft, I'm good.
Probably good. You're with, you are probably good
man along the carriage.
Yeah, but you would probably, you could get in. I'm not going to sell anyone getting in. You would hate it. Every second of it.
Yeah, it seems like an uncomfortable situation for a lot of people, just full stop.
Yeah, and here's my second question, more importantly.
Please.
What's like the fucking, like, what kind of clearance do you need to get as you're in a fucking jet screaming down the California coast?
And it's surprisingly little.
Okay, it's not like a fucking prop, like a propeller plane. You're in a fucking fighter jet. Like, at what point do you go, like, do you have to be like, hey, this is fucking PK-9er. Like, don't shoot me down.
Jaggy up here in the blue skies, cleared for San Diego. We're a good
18 minutes. The weather in San Diego is a nice 81 degrees.
Well, here's the thing that you don't realize, or at least I didn't realize until a friend of mine became a pilot, is that that communication with the tower is constant. And to me, very annoying because it's a formalized, it's technical speech. I think about coming down at 18,000 feet. We've got a marine layer that I'd like to stay above, but I am interested in an approach at Gillespie Field and it's
that's a negative. You're right. Like there's all, yeah, they come back quick.
And it's so you're talking to someone, but it's not like a cool conversation with someone you want to talk to. This is like but it's a very specific type of thing exchange that I find it like, you know, the people
irritating. I didn't know what they were talking about.
Yeah, exactly. But pilots, it's just, I don't know. It's second nature. Exactly right.
I wonder what's the cruising altitude of a jet like that. It's probably like 5,000, right? Like, because can't go that high because you don't have enough time to make the parabola.
I think you have to go up high on that speed, and that's
my memory of it was high. Hold on.
Well, I mean, of course, I mean 5,000 feet, still pretty fucking high. It's a mile high.
Let's see. Hold on.
You're back. Carousel 7. You get to bring back.
Pilot has disappeared. You do bring bags. But
is there a trunk? Is it in the front? It's like limited. A fucking Jeep? It's like a Beetle?
Yeah, you got it. You've done to the Jets before.
Really?
But it's big enough for like, you know, one duffel bag or two large backpacks, I guess.
Have you watched Dunkirk?
I have, yeah. I actually love it.
Does it make you like appreciate even more? Like imagine being in that like sardine can and it's people shooting stuff at you. All right, connect.
Say that again.
I said, have you watch Dunkirk? Do you appreciate even more now, given the fact that like you're in a sardine can above the earth and people are shooting at you?
Oh yeah, listen, I don't think that this will come as a surprise to anybody. I'm not built for all that. I'm flying away. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, oh, here's some. It's an active combat situation. Patrick is actively moving in the opposite direction. Any bravery I have doesn't apply to things I don't understand. So like if somebody rushes me, this is a male idiot impulse. You go, okay. I know what this is. I think I can handle it. Now you can't, the man's bigger than you and he's got a knife, but you go, I think I can handle it. Firefights feel like the most disorienting, terrifying thing. Things are moving faster than my eye can follow. Like whenever I
feel the same way with UFC.
Okay. So that's a smart man. You are a smart man. Most men watch UFC and go, just uppercut. You know, they're like, what do you?
Yeah, they think they're Bison Honda or whatever it is.
I would legitimately not be able to dodge one punch.
No, I think it would be an exceptional moment of grace and luck.
I would have to either eat it because I have a fucking giant head, or just fucking get like. Did you guys watch UFC 300 at all?
No, I didn't see it. I heard it was good. It was a big deal.
So, one of the coolest fights I've ever seen in my life. We can get to sports and we can get back to hardcore. Because sure. I feel like hardcore and like MMA kind of go hand in hand because that's what a lot of hardcore dudes do. Fucking the graps and the jujits and all this sort of stuff.
Sure. Yeah, it's like the pit.
So, they're fighting this dude, Max Holloway from Hawaii, dude, Justin Gaethje. They're fighting there for this made up belt called the Bad Motherfucker Belt.
Okay.
What do you mean?
The BMF belt.
Where did this arrive? I thought this was a real sport.
I mean, this is so Gaethje had it, put it up for, was defending it. So it's a 5-round fight. They're in the 5th round. Holloway is winning. Like, pretty, not decidedly, but, you know, he's definitely going to win if it goes to the judges. With, like, 10 seconds left, he just points to the middle of the octagon, and they both meet there and just start throwing punches. Like,
that's entertaining.
But the fucked up thing, like, this dude could have played it easy and he would have won.
Yeah.
This dude, Gaethje, that he's fighting is a bad fucking, he's a lunatic who could definitely knock him out with a punch. They're fucking going back and forth. They're throwing. Max Holloway knocks this dude unconscious, like face down, fucking like destroyed with 1 second left on the 4:59 into the 5th round. It was fucking unbelievable. But I couldn't dodge anything. Like, I know why that guy got punched in the fucking head.
No, these guys are like, yes, in reality, these are professionals. If you're not a professional, you probably aren't. You're probably not dodging. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you're dodging much. Also, I for people that have seen my neck, it's not made for impact. You know what I mean? It's like me taking a punch. On the rare occasions that I've taken punches in life, I've done better than I expected. But if you hit me hard enough, it's going to be like I'm in a car accident. My neck is just like I'm a bobblehead. You know?
Have you seen that movie Smile, Pat?
I have not. It looks too scary for me.
It's really fucking scary. But there's a scene where like this woman's like coming up to the front door, like. This woman's like driver's side door, and she knocks on the window, and her head like drops. But yes, that's what I imagine what your head would look like if someone punched you in the fucking neck.
Big enough man, that is what would happen. My head would fall off. So I was at 11-5 in the jet the other day. This particular jet can go to 30,000 feet. However, you need an oxygen mask after about 21.
So you were at 11-5.
I was at 11-5.
You're 2 miles high.
That's true. That's true.
There's a bunch of the U.S. that's at 11.5. You're okay. Close enough.
You know, I am pro trying new things, but experimental jets and helicopters. Yeah,